Okay, welcome back. We are talking about designing applications for Surface Hub, and this is a session for both designers and developers who are building applications using UWP for Surface Hub. And I'm joined today by Jackie. So let's introduce ourselves. I'm Neil Rudin. I've been working with Microsoft for a very long time, and I'm a MVP and regional director with Microsoft. And the last 5-6 years, I've been very focused on how do we get multiple people engaged with single large screens and digital content at the same time.
And hello, I'm Jackie Giusti. I get to be both a design lead as well as software developer on the developer experience team here at Microsoft. I focus most of my goals in trying to make the best user experiences across the different platforms and devices that Microsoft works with.
Excellent. So this is the second session in designing for and building applications for Surface Hub. We already have produced an introduction session, and I would encourage you to go and watch that if you haven't watched it yet before you watch this session, because it will provide some background as to what the Surface Hub is and how you can take best advantage of it. This session is all around the design and how to design great applications for Surface Hub. And following on from this is a set of tutorials which will take you through the code that you need to build in order to create these great Surface Hub applications. So let's get started and think about how we got here. So if you think about the history of Microsoft, and over the last 30 years, we've gone from a text-driven experience through to a GUI experience, through to what we're calling a natural user experience or a NUI experience. And there's a big shift that happens in each of these. In a text-driven world, you have to remember all the commands that you put into the system, you have to type them in, and often you don't get very much feedback. It just says an error or something has occurred. Yep. It's very hard to find the features that are available. In a GUI world, you can really use your mouse to explore the different features. You can pull out menus. Oh, wonder what this menu does. And there's a whole list of things. You can hover your mouse over an icon. A little tooltip appears and tells you what that icon does. Moving to a NUI world, or a much more directed interaction, we're now moving to a space where, using our fingers and touch and pens and styluses, we have a much more natural experience with our digital content. We can literally grab our digital content, move it around, stretch it, navigate it, draw on it in a very human, natural way. And so the Surface Hub applications that you're building, you should really think about how they take advantage of a lot of the NUI ideas that have been generated over the last 10 years or so. And in order to do that, Jackie's going to talk to you about the design pillars that lead you into a great Surface Hub application.
So with Microsoft having built on different ways for thinking about the large screen, multi-touch, and multi-user experience, it's been built from the past 10 years, and it's really kind of come down to these three pillars being social, seamless, and spatial. With social, it's really much trying to still think about the user experience in an emotionally enhanced way, still engaging with the audience and being more interactive with them, having that interaction though be very natural, having it be still interactive and seamless across whether or not you are interacting on any type of device. This is just an additional piece to that. It is a larger screen, but you still want to have the interaction be as seamless. Taking that into consideration though, it is spatial. You want to think about the zooming, the large step away experience, as well as the close interaction and how that changes from user to user and when you have multiple users in it.
Great. And we'll talk about these design pillars as we go through the different ideas that we have to help you build better applications. So the first thing to think about as you start putting together your application and the design for your application is that within the UWP ecosystem, there's already been a lot of design guidelines, especially for touch and multi-touch and for pen input. And all of those still apply and should still be used. And you can start using those to start creating a good Surface Hub application. Mm-hmm. But how do we take that and then enhance it so that it really takes advantage of the fact that we're working on this big 84-inch screen, 4K screen? So let's talk about some of those things.
So one of the first ones is that in most of the other devices that you interact with, you really are used to having just one menu. You access a menu and it is usually stuck to the bottom or to the top. However, as you can imagine, having that all the way up and to the top, not only am I getting possibly into other people's spaces to interact with it, but I also will probably be limiting a lot of people who have to overstretch, even just like myself, to do so. So one type of consideration, it's not the only one, but a consideration is to actually have menus on both sides of the screen. It makes it so that Neil can access the menu and be able to interact with it on his side without coming over to mine, and similarly, I can interact with it without coming over to his.
Right, great. The other thing to think about, is avoiding occlusion. The content should be king here. So as you are interacting with a piece of content and you have menus that pop up around that content, think about how those menus and those features that enable behavior do not get in the way of the content. And one of the reasons to think more about that is that the content could be something that multiple people are engaged with at the same time. And so as I bring up a menu, I don't want to block what Jackie is seeing by my action. And so you want to avoid that from happening. Again, it's a consideration for multi-user versus single-user type applications.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is scale. As you can see here in this image, even from a large distance, you would be able to see what all these different icons are. But see how much real estate this is actually taking up on the whole screen. You could be taking out a half, a third of the screen just by having menus be scaled to this size. So you really want to think about having a space where it doesn't take up too much. It's scaled properly, so you still have the main focus being the interaction space in the middle. This also allows for even more people to be able to interact with the Surface Hub.
Cool. And of course, while we're talking about multiple users, we should be thinking about how we design for multiple users, right? Mm-hmm. And so again, most of our applications that we build are very focused on either a mobile device or a tablet or a personal computer. And we only think about the one user. Oh, one user, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. Whereas when we're designing for a hub, we need to design for multiple people to be touching the screen at the same time. And there's multiple ways of doing that. One way is to section the screen off into different areas. But often you want to be working on the same content at the same time. And so again, you want to think about the aspects of that. And we'll talk more about that as we get into the more detailed design. But at a high level, think about the aspects of that that trigger so that I can have more than one person engaged here at the same time. And one of the ways to do that and one of the ways to think about that is to avoid modality. A lot of applications use modes of operation. So you go into a mode of operation. I'm in drawing mode. I'm in panning mode. I'm in zooming mode. I'm in, you know, creation mode. I'm in editing mode.
Or I'm in something that's asking me to open up a map or another screen.
Yeah, and actually we see that a lot in dialog boxes, right? A dialog box comes up and it stops the rest of the app from working while I enter some data into the dialog box.
Exactly.
We want to stop that from happening in a hub, because if I did that, if I did a, you know, open a new piece of content, file open, imagine, it then blocks everyone else from doing something. That's not a great experience. So you want to make sure that whatever happens, whatever one person does, doesn't block the experience of other people. Now again, you could do that by splitting off an area of the screen, or you could do that by creating non-modal input mechanisms.
Another thing to consider, again going back to the multi-user, is that you want to be thinking about not just one stylus pen. The Surface Hub is really unique in that it is able to take in multiple inputs. We have a stylus pen on either side where both people can interact in it, and it is able to take both these inputs simultaneously. It's a lot of fun, and you can claim your pen as you might need, but we really want to think about ultimately how you want to make an app that will constantly be considering the ability for multiple inputs, not just considering just one person and that one person experience.
Right, and this is multi-stylus as well as multi-touch at the same time, right? So mm-hmm. I might be writing in one piece of the document while you're moving around and navigating using touch a different part of the content. And mm-hmm. so we need to think about how we enable that as well within our applications. And the next thing to think about is authentication. And again, we talked a little bit about this in the introduction session, but to dive a little deeper, I guess we want to make sure that you don't build an application that requires authentication to get started. If you think about one of the pillars that Jackie spoke about is seamless, mm-hmm. right? And so you said it needs to be a seamless experience. I want to be able to walk up to this and start using it. I don't want to have any kind of friction to my engagement.
Or uncertainty on who else will be able to see the same content that
That's
you might
true
be
too.
Inputting.
Yeah. So to lower the friction, there should always in every application be a way that you can engage with that application at a high level and start doing things of some value before I authenticate.
Correct.
Then maybe content, specific types of content or areas of storage are available when I do authenticate and authorize to get access to that. And I want to think about ways that I can do that in my application without having to bring up a soft keyboard. And mm-hmm. primarily because if I start typing my password in, you just saw it, right?
Correct.
So how else can I do that?
Well, some ways is through two-factor authentication. That is a means to be able to overcome that, as well as NFC. You can possibly be able to interact with it that way.
Right, so you could use your mobile device, maybe you tap on, it gives you a second factor, your mobile device comes up and says, hey Neil, did you just tap on to the Surface Hub? You say yes, I'll give permission, and then my content becomes available, whatever content I want to share becomes available within that session.
And of course you also want to consider, with it being multi-user, how you might want to try to interact with multiple people signing in, right?
Right, so you might need to have both you log in to get your OneDrive and I log in to get to my SharePoint site, right? And so there's a consideration there that your session may have to keep in context multiple people have authorized access to different endpoints. And that's an interesting thing for you to think about as a software developer mm-hmm. that you probably don't normally think about within your standard desktop applications. So to summarize,
ultimately, you want to, of course, allow users to have the easy access to menus. And that includes the scalability, making sure to consider the scale not just of the menus, but of the content that you have, the icons, which we'll also dive further into. You want to design for inclusion, not occlusion. Make sure that when you are interacting with elements that it's not cutting into the overall interaction space. Design for multiple users, and that includes things like avoiding modality, mm-hmm. and then allowing for the multi-stylus input, and allowing for multiple users to log into a session.
Great. So that would let us build a good UWP app for Surface Hub, right?
Yes.
But what if we want to build a great UWP app for Surface Hub?
Right? Neil, will you explain that?
Let's do that. Let's get into and really build something that's amazing. And to do that, there's some further considerations that we've kind of brought together for you to think about. And the first one is that the engagement should be really obvious. I should be able to walk up and start using the application without having to go and read a manual, because no one's going to read the manual anyway, right? So
right.
It should be something that's really obvious as to how I use it, and I can start learning how to use it by using it. So it should, a great application should start teaching us the features that become available as I start using it.
All right. Further, again, this isn't a one person interaction device. This isn't bound by just the keyboard and the mouse. We do have a soft keyboard, if you ever do need it, as well as keyboard actually provided. But ultimately, this Surface Hub is really meant for the pen and for the finger touch. We're not talking about just one touch. We're talking about multiple fingers being able to interact with it, and you really wanted to design an interface that is focused on being able to have different types of input for you.
And as you have different types of input and you have a very large screen, you want to think about how those items, those digital pieces of content, relate to each other across the screen. So as I have a piece of content here and you have a piece of content there, is there a visual representation of the connection between those pieces of content? And that's something that you want to think about within the design of your application, is creating these connection pieces in a visual language that identifies to me that as I'm modifying something or interacting with some piece of the screen here, it somehow is related to something else on another part of the screen. And that's something for you to think about within your application design.
Which is kind of continued with transitions. Because of the fact that I might be just interacting with one space of this entire 84-inch screen, and Neil might just be more centrally located to where he's at, you want to make sure that when you're interacting, there is interactions, animations, transitions that let you know that it might end up on a different part of the screen. You don't want to have, for example, the UWP toast notifications come up over here when Neil's interacting with something and no one else be able to see it, he not be able to quickly identify it.
Right.
Having a kind of more centered location that can bring possibly visual clues to both people, numerous users, of what's happening on the screen is important.
Great. Get your interface items and your menus into a position that they're easy to use. You know, here we've got an example of the hamburger menu top left. It's probably the worst kind of interface you could use for Surface Hub, because if we had a menu up here, you would never be able to reach that, right? So that would be totally useless. And if you put the hub on a wall and mount it a little bit higher, probably some people can't even reach to that.
Mm-hmm.
So think about how those interface items are accessible for people. And maybe one of the ways to think about that is to make sure that the interface for engagement and interaction with a piece of content is somehow attached to that piece of content. So if I had a document here that I'm working with, or a piece of content that I'm working with, maybe there's a menu that somehow is connected to that. So as I flick that piece of content over to you and send it to your side of the screen, you can carry on working with it because the menu for that piece of content is somehow attached to that piece of content. It's not the only way, but it's one way that you might think about creating an interface where you have almost a just-in-time menu that's available related to the content that you're interacting with around the content that you're interacting with it. Now, one of the ways that you can think about this is how people remember things. And people remember interfaces usually using spatial memory. So if I say to you, where's the file menu, you think top left. If I say to you, where's the help menu, you think top right.
Right? Yes.
And so you know straight away where file and help are. And you probably, if I say to you, where's the window menu, you probably have an idea of where that is as well. That's all spatial memory. So within your application, as you're building it out, you want to think about how you're taking advantage of human spatial memory to remember where items are. And this leads to creating an interface that is really easy to use, because people, as they start using it, remember where they've left things or remember where things popped out. They go, oh yeah, that was here. And then they go to that location and carry on using it.
And that is also then brought back to thinking about how this is already designed on your other devices.
Right.
You want to make sure that even though you might be used to the file system being across the whole top and being the first thing, file at the top left corner, you want to then have a similar layout where that'll still be the first thing that you encounter. But it might not exactly be the same interaction,
right,
but it's going to be something where you're going to have that familiarity, you're going to have the same types of elements and have that consistency of UI. You want to do that not just with how your navigation works, but also with how you interact with the application as a whole.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. So then as I move from this application to another version of the application that maybe runs on my mobile device,
mm-hmm,
there's a consistency, even though it's a very different experience, there's a consistency between the interfaces. I guess the mouse pointer, which we've used for, you know, a number of years as our way of interacting with a computer, mm-hmm. is worth remembering is a very precise pointing device. Once you've learned how to use it, it takes a bit of learning. And if you have watched a child or a grandmother learning to use a mouse, it's kind of funny. But there is a learning curve you go through. There isn't a learning curve with your finger. You kind of point at stuff and it works, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's a very natural interface. But the mouse is more precise. Once you've learned how to use it, you can almost be pixel precise with what you click on. You can't be with your finger. Some people's fingers are fatter than others, but as you touch things, you'll find that there's kind of an area that you're interacting with. And so you need to think about how you design an interface that works well for fingers of different sizes and different shapes as they, you know, people move around, and also for multiple fingers at the same time. That's the big advantage of touch over a mouse, is you typically only have one mouse cursor on the screen.
Yes.
Whereas we can have 10 touches, 20 touches on the screen at the same time. So there's a trade-off there of things to think about. And that leads to...
But similarly, when you are considering icon sizes, and back to the scalability, is you want to make sure that you don't have the huge, large menu screens that take up so much real estate and take away from the interaction for any number of users. But you also don't want it so small that it can get in the way of your finger touching, as well as maybe the visibility for people that are giving inputs to the ones directly interacting but are staying more in the interaction space versus mm-hmm. directly on the Surface Hub itself. You want to make sure that they are easily accessible. You want to make sure that they're very visible, but you don't want them to take up too much real estate, and you want them to be easy to interact with.
Cool, yeah.
Very closely tied to that, menus, you want to make sure that it has proper spacing, that there is enough to be able to choose different ones without them being overlapped, without there being confusion of which one you might actually select. You want to make sure that ultimately there's enough space. Again, it's visible, but it doesn't take away too much from the main interaction.
Right, so there's a distance between the items that you're touching so that you're not touching the wrong thing by mistake is kind of fundamental to a lot of this as well, right? So
yes.
It's got to be big enough to touch and far enough away from everything else that you don't touch the wrong thing.
Right.
And I guess this is part of the challenge with direct manipulation versus indirect manipulation, because with indirect manipulation, you kind of move a mouse around on a table and this cursor moves around here. Whereas with direct manipulation, I literally grab the object that I want to engage with and move it. And that's something to think about with the applications that you're building, is how to make sure that those objects are directly manipulatable. So I want to scale something, I shouldn't have to hit a plus or a minus button, I should just grab it and scale it. And that's a much more natural, direct way of engaging with things. So think about how the content that you want to manipulate can be manipulated through touch gestures versus menu interface items that are clickable. And then you'll get a richer direct manipulation type experience, which is part of, you know, our pillars. We talked about both seamless and spatial. This is both seamless and spatial. It's a seamless interaction in a spatial engagement.
But similarly, an interesting thing to consider is the lack of a hover.
Right. So there's no hover. As I move my finger towards something, there's no detection of it until I actually touch the screen. So with a mouse, you kind of move over something and a tooltip appears. I don't have that with touch. So we need to think about how we create an interface that's really obvious, I guess, to mm-hmm. the customer that's using it, or the customers on your multi-user application that are using it, without the need of a tooltip. In fact, a tooltip is almost a crutch, because it means your icon probably isn't very obvious, right?
Right, so discoverability as well as...
Discoverability is really important.
Discoverability as well as ultimately having it be understandable, very quick to digest.
Exactly. Now, this is a lesson that we learned a while back as we started building touch interfaces, is that even when you have an area that doesn't have a function or a real utilization space, blank areas, dead areas of your space should still provide feedback when a customer touches it. And the reason for that is that as long as I'm providing feedback, and you see Windows 10 even does this, you just get a little glow when I touch the screen, is that it lets me know that the screen is working.
Mm-hmm.
And the touch is working. And there is nothing to do there. It's just a little bit of feedback that tells me, hey, there's nothing to happen here, but you did touch it. I saw that you touched the screen. So when you're building your application, make sure that any dead space you have, which is fine, it's good to have white space around your content, it still reacts to touch so the customer knows that the touch is working and it's not like a broken application.
Basically, lastly, is that you really want, back to that social aspect of pillars, is you want to be engaging with people. And that comes to the Surface Hub in that as you add more people to being in an interactive space, you want it to become even more engaging.
Right.
So you really want to try to think about how your app can improve, can be added onto with the fact of having more than one user, adding more people to the space.
Great. So thank you very much for watching this. This is conclusion of the second part of the series on designing and developing for Surface Hub. Been great to have you here, Jackie, and it's good to know that you're around and you're, I guess, a resource for customers that want to find out more and help and get some help designing great Surface Hub applications here in the developer experience team at Microsoft.
And thank you so much, Neil, for bringing me along so I could be able to talk with you and everyone out there for it.
Great, thanks. And we hope you see the rest of the tutorials and can start following along and building great Surface Hub applications. Thanks, guys.